It's time for Knox Talk, a behind-the-scenes look at the business side of college sports, featuring Paul Sickman from Knox Sports and Brandon Parks from the Vol Network. Now for today's show.
Welcome, all of you, to another edition of Knox Talk. Today is Wednesday, June 18th, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend from the University of Tennessee, Brandon Parks. Good afternoon, Brandon.
Hey, Paul. Sun's not shining as brightly for Florida State and Tennessee baseball as it was a week ago, but I think our team gave valiant efforts in the Supers, fell a little bit short. Disappointed, but I guess that's a good disappointment when you're used to your team having that kind of success in postseason baseball. But we will find a way to forge ahead and move forward.
You are right, and we are not recording this live from Omaha right now, which is certainly disappointing. But we will move on. And today we're going to have a discussion about sponsorship agreements and the cost of doing business within those agreements. You know, every single sponsorship has what is referred to as hard costs inside it. And hard costs are inventory items that have a cost that the multimedia rights holder has to pay out of their pocket. This could be a suite, that could be tickets, promotional items, prizes for a contest, which might be flights or other amazing things to give away. Really, anything where money is being spent is a hard cost. And many, many years ago, before the revenue pressures ramped up to ridiculous levels on the Learfields, Playflies, Van Wagners, and Legends of the world, the bottom line was the bottom line. If a $50,000 deal had $30,000 in costs, it was still okay. The multimedia rights holder was ostensibly helping their school partner and selling tickets, hospitality packages, and so it didn't feel as bad as it's kind of evolved to. And the changes were slow but steady over time as the bosses at these multimedia rights holders begin to demand profitability within the deals. Doing a $100,000 deal where half the money goes out the door may not be the best model for EBITDA. And I get that, but where I got frosty and where I want to kind of, you know, lead this discussion was when the MMRs created percentage rules on their folks at the local level. They basically went to people like you, Brandon, and they said, hey, there is a percentage that is no good. There is a percentage where we can't cross this Mendoza line of percentage of hard costs. You have to keep hard costs below that number. And I know that people out there, like in your shoes, some people are very strict about that, and some people certainly look at the greater good. But Brandon, tell me about your feelings on this as it has evolved over time.
Well, key word there is evolved. When you go back to the dark ages, when you and I started in this business, we had such transactional sponsorship assets in our portfolio. It was a lot of traditional media type things. And if we had hard costs, usually it came in the form of tickets or hospitality. That has really completely changed in how we go to market today. One, we have so many more assets within our portfolio to be able to build these strategies with, but a lot of those assets are going to come with expenses that are associated with it. And I think we've had to evolve to a place to understand that it's the cost of doing business. If we want to continue to raise the stakes and raise the overall prices from a sponsorship revenue perspective. But back to your point, I think a lot of it does come down to individual agreements, specifically with the client, and then what are the fixed costs that you know that you're going to have within that agreement. And really for us, it's an evaluation on a deal by deal basis. And a lot of it goes back to how does this partner fit into our current portfolio? Is it an area where we are trying to gain a partner? And so we're willing to maybe do a little bit more than we normally would just to get them on board, or is it a very competitive category where there are other players that are in the space, and maybe we don't have to be as aggressive on the fixed cost side of things? And I think a lot of it just goes back to doing the best deals that you possibly can to ultimately fit your overall portfolio or your book of business And then what's going to ultimately benefit the school? There are so many factors that go into the cost side of this and what makes sense and what is part of a good deal and then possibly what's not part of a good deal. But I will tell you, we really take it case by case, client by client, category by category.
And that's the right way to do it. And we're going to get at the end of this, the finish line here is about the goals of the client. And we're going to get there in a second, because you said you talked a lot about the goals of your overall portfolio. And I know that for a fact that you're going to look at the goals of the client primarily as well and figure out, okay, is that hard cost a necessary evil to make this deal work for the client and get to their goals? And that's really where I wanted to finish. But before we get there, something else, we talked about the evolution of hard costs. The biggest evolution of hard costs, because when you and I started, you remember, we wanted to sell signs and we wanted to sell time on radio. And those two primary inventory items were very, very easy and very palatable for everybody because both of those were a profit center. Yes, you might have spent a little bit of money to do the old hard costs on creating a sign. And you may have had a little bit of money in radio production, but not much. Radio and signage was really where you wanted to stick people because that was a profit center. But what changed, and it's because that's how marketing changed, is the evolution of hard cost imploded with the advent of social media. When social media hit, everybody wanted it. And at first it was easy. Not only did they want it, they had to have it. And again, it was easy because it was almost free at the very beginning because you could just lean on the school and say, hey, could you please include this promotion or this mention in your normal feed? And that was easy. And the school said yes. And then before you know it, everyone was doing that. And the school said no. And then it evolved in a hard way over the next 3 to 4 years where it wasn't easy and it wasn't free. And the school was no longer your partner in that relationship. You had to go out there and spend money, real money, to make that social media program work. And it wasn't just the money to buy in the back end. It was the money to create. And so that became a huge, huge shift in how hard costs evolved inside a deal. Don't you agree, Brandon?
Yeah, no, I agree. And we had to address this, and we did several years ago, specifically for digital media, but we now have multiple team members here that are schooled in graphic design to help build campaigns. Because a lot of times, and you run in this too, you get clients, bigger clients, and they want all these things, but then they don't have the internal resources to create the campaigns. Right. And so you have the discussion with the client. Well, I want to do this, but I don't have any way of creating this. If you can't come up with a solution on how we can get the creative done, then I don't know if we can do the deal or not. So we need to be a solutions provider.
Right.
And so we made that decision several years ago. And not only has that benefited us in the digital space, but then also the digital signage space. Because we have very little permanent fixed signs anymore. Everything's run through digital.
Right.
But we needed someone on our team that could help build out those type things. And when you looked at what our expenses were previously and then potentially what it would be to bring someone in full time, we made the decision that that's the route we were going to go in.
It happened with your boss too, right? I mean, Learfield as a company, along with all the other MMRs, have taken on that role as well. They're not putting money out. They're hiring their own company. The Think Socials of the company, Fan365, are two of the examples that you guys have used that are in-house companies. So now that money that used to being spent outside is being funneled through you. And so another opportunity for you guys to take advantage of it. It doesn't mean it's not a hard cost. There's still a hard cost associated with that. But that hard cost has been mitigated now a little bit because that hard cost is now going through you.
Yeah, and we at the property level are almost a very small example of that. When you look at Learfield as a whole and the resources that the company has invested in across the board to help create content, whatever that content may be, we have more resources, more opportunities now than ever before, which hopefully helps us monetize more. That's the goal, is if we bring these resources to the table, that it's going to help us continue to drive revenue up, up, and up. And you know, even down to the Social Plus content creators that are now on our campuses that help us with NIL content, that help us with school content, all of those things that those Social Plus coordinators are working on are content campaigns that have revenue assigned to it. Mm-hmm. And it's much more efficient if I have a one-stop shop that can help us bring those things to life versus treating each one as a one-off scenario and trying to figure out who in the market or who with Learfield is the best solution. We've gotten better at it. We're getting better at it. And I think we will continue to evolve.
Yeah. And so let's get back to that percentage question, Brandon, which I know is kind of a touchy subject, especially for us on our side. When I am buying, and we have a client list of goals and objectives, which we're going to finish with here in a second. And at the end of the day, that $150,000 package results in a 17% or 20% hard cost piece because of the goals and objectives have driven us there. And I have a person on the property side telling me we really just can't. Those numbers are too high. I got to tell you, I go crazy. Because that, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, $18,000 is going out the door, but 132 is coming in. And I get very frustrated with that conversation. And I don't know if you ever have any pushback from your corporate people, or that is something that is changing and they give you the latitude as a general manager to make that decision on your own.
I wouldn't say necessarily pressure from the corporate entity. I think the biggest change that's evolved in college sports amongst a lot of big changes is, first of all, what is the agreement at that specific university? Is it a guaranteed rights fee, or is it more to a revenue share type model? And so you almost have to unpack what the agreement is with the school to see what the margins is for the property at the property level. And some of that will dictate how much money you can or cannot invest into hard cost expenses associated with the deal. I totally understand from the client side of the table, if I'm willing to invest $150,000 and you've got $30,000 in hard cost, you're still plus 120. Totally get that. But then how does those expenses offset the overall property's budget and the overall property's financial objectives? And so you get into that discussion. And what's made it a lot more difficult, just like you were talking about earlier, we sell that sign in the outfield. We know we're going to have four tickets that are going to go with that. So when that pricing strategy is essentially built for that sign in the outfield, we take into consideration what the hard cost of those expenses are going to be. So you know going in that you're comfortable with that. In the world we operate in now, it is so wide-ranging and so varying on what expenses can be associated with certain assets or in certain parts of the deal. Again, that's why I go back to really case-by-case scenario and what makes the most sense from the client's perspective, but then also from the property's perspective. We've also dove into conversations around, you know, a lot of us now are selling premium entitlement spaces within our venues. Well, they're build-out expenses that are associated with those specific spaces. So who's responsible for those build-out expenses? How do those get done? And so, again, I don't know if there's a single answer for it. There's certainly not a percentage of, if we hit this percent, then we're teetering on whether it's a good deal or bad deal. I don't think that's where we're at. I think it's really case by case. And you have to take into consideration those expenses. But here's the other layer of that. The amount of work that's associated with those expenses. And so the amount of time, our properties are small. We're lean and mean is how we like to look at it. So we also have to think about the opportunity cost of time and what goes into each of those agreements.
Yeah, but those aren't hard costs. I mean, I hear you, you're right. But those aren't a hard cost that comes back. But I want to circle back to what you just said a few minutes ago. You talked about how when you have a rev share, that affects it. So dig into that a little bit, Brandon. So if you have a rev share at University of Tennessee and you're splitting money after you hit your number, you're saying that at that point, whether you're close to it or whether you know it's out there somewhere and it's attainable, that it becomes easier to have a higher hard cost because the university is basically in bed with you.
Yeah, that easier probably is a relative term on that because you're going to hit that threshold. You're going to hit that guaranteed rights fee, and then you're in the rev share. Well, a lot of that depends on what your rev share looks like. Is it 90-10 or is it 70-30? What may that rev share be? Because then that's going to give you some latitude to be able to do some agreements that do have some hard costs built into it. So that when you go in to analyze that agreement, you look at the financials part of it and you say, okay, based on the rev share that we're under, we can take in these hard cost expense and it's still a good deal for the property, or our share is so small that that it is not advantageous for us to do it and financially doesn't make a lot of sense. So a lot of it's relative to the individual agreements that are in place at each of the individual schools versus a one swipe where everyone's working under very similar agreements. Yeah. And it's more complicated today than it has ever been across everything that that we're touching. And when you think about how NIL impacts that and what we're being asked to do in the NIL space, what we're being asked to do around naming rights, premium assets, premium entitlements, those kinds of things. And then the traditional MMR assets that flow into that. The business is much more complicated and you have to think much more thoughtfully about things than you did, say, in the early 2000s.
Yeah, and we didn't even touch on that one. NIL is another hard cost, and a hard cost the school is pushing you to do, right? The school is putting pressure on every MMR across the country to please add add NIL costs into these sponsorships so they can take care of their student athletes. And ultimately, as I said, we're going to finish here. It comes back to, for us and for you, it comes back to the client objectives. Right. So if the client is able to feel like they accomplish their goals with those tools, whether it's tickets, NIL, social media, away game flights for a contest, hospitality, whatever those costs are, if that ultimately achieves the client goal, then they're going to renew.
Right.
And so, and if that deal is incredibly uncomfortable in year one, our mutual goal as a buyer and a seller is to make that deal more comfortable over time and to figure out assets outside of hard costs that are going to hammer that deal home and make it better and better. And that is really where it lays, because the old world, the old soft costs that were the things we sold, circling back, signage, and radio, are now some of our least effective executors. They're not saying they don't work. They're just not at the same level of execution. And we probably can't point to them as incredible goal-achieving pieces than we could have 10 years ago and 20 years ago. So knowing that, and knowing that here are the client objectives and here are the hard costs, you're right. This is a challenge, and it's not going to get any easier. And you're right, again, at the finish line, NIL is going to make it even more difficult.
No, that's right. Back to your point, I think you do take it on a client-by-client basis and ultimately make the decision, certainly from our side of the table, of what's best for the property and the school and the client. And hopefully those things marry up. Yep. And you say, hey, let's move forward. This is going to be a good deal for us. It's going to be a good relationship for us.
And so when you evaluate hard costs and you figure it all out, at the end of the day, it's all about how do we renew getting closer to both of our goals. And that's it. And so I appreciate, Brandon, I appreciate you indicating that it's a case-by-case basis. I wish every school in the country took that same mantra, because it doesn't feel that way on our side. But I appreciate you and the way you do business. So Brandon Parks gets a win today. I'm Paul Sickman with Knox Sports. We'll see you again in a couple weeks. Thank you for listening. Talk to you soon.